Good morning, it's Tuesday, July 14th, 2026, and this is Pip Install, your daily download on power, security and the machines. Yesterday the Strait of Hormuz was a standoff. Overnight it became a killing ground. Iran put cruise missiles into two oil tankers, a crewman is dead, and at 4 o'clock this afternoon the United States says it will slam an entire country's port shut. The price of oil already got the message. That's the lead. Then, the hunt for a leaker goes to the top of the FBI. Japan builds its first spy agency in 80 years, and the Pentagon picks a fight with windmills. Let's install today's update.
Start where the blood is.
Overnight, Iran fired cruise missiles at two Emirati oil tankers, the Mombasa and the Al Bahia, in the southern lane of the Strait of Hormuz, inside Omani waters. Both caught fire. An Indian crewman aboard the Mombasa was killed. 8 more people were hurt. Freya, the significance.
It crosses a line the whole war had, until now, mostly avoided. A dead civilian sailor on a commercial ship. And notice whose ship? Emirati tankers, crewed by an Indian merchant seaman, hit in Omani water. The United Arab Emirates and Oman are not at war with anyone. They are simply the neighbours. And their sea is now a place where a man doing his job gets killed for it. Iran also fired at Jordan overnight. Oman says it intercepted 4 missiles and set off alerts again in Bahrain. And then there's the detail that tells you how far Tehran has committed. Iran's own Strait Authority, a body it invented during the ceasefire to control crossings, put out a statement declaring passage through Hormuz, its word, unfeasible. Iran is no longer just contesting the strait. It's announcing it has broken it.
And the American answer is escalation of a different kind. Because the president had already torn up the truce himself. Here he was last week, blunt as ever.
As far as I'm concerned, it's over.
Stack, where does the escalation go from here?
A third consecutive night of strikes. Central Command calls it a 5-hour mission against Iranian coastal defences, missile and drone sites and naval assets from Bushehr to Bandar Abbas. More than 300 targets across 3 nights. But the headline isn't the bombs, it's the blockade. President Trump says that at 4 o'clock this afternoon, Eastern Time, the United States will reinstate a full naval blockade of ships going in and out of Iranian ports. And, remarkably, that Washington will begin charging its own toll, 20% of the cargo, on every ship crossing Hormuz. Sit with the symmetry. Iran tried to turn the strait into a toll booth, and the US response is to build a bigger toll booth on top of it, backed by carriers. This is no longer a punitive air campaign. A blockade is an act of war you can see from orbit, and it puts American warships directly between Iranian ports and the open sea. The market did the math instantly. Brent crude broke $86, the highest in a month. And US crude jumped above 80. When you hear toll on Hormuz, hear tax on everything.
Bash, the human cost underneath all of it.
There's always a person at the bottom of it. Tonight, it's a merchant sailor from India who signed on to the Mombasa to send money home and instead became the first person killed on a civilian ship in this chapter of the war. He didn't pick a side. Merchant crews never do. They are the invisible people who move 90% of everything you own, and they are the ones a cruise missile finds first. And let's be exact about who fired it. This is the same Iranian regime that spent the ceasefire building a bureaucracy to tax the strait, that treats a shipping lane the whole world depends on as its personal hostage. You can grieve that dead sailor, I do, and still say plainly, a government that puts missiles into fuel tankers to make a point about tolls is not defending itself. It's holding the global economy at gunpoint and pulling the trigger on the help. The strait will reopen. That crewman's family does not get a reopening.
Watch 4 o'clock Eastern. If the blockade actually goes up and stays up, today is the day this war stops being over there and starts being at your pump. Home to Washington, where the story we flagged yesterday just climbed the ladder. Heap.
It sprinted up the ladder. Yesterday, it was the Justice Department subpoenaing four New York Times reporters over the story that the president flew home from the NATO summit on the old Air Force One because the Secret Service had security worries about the Qatar-gifted jet. Today, the White House has directed the director of the FBI, Kash Patel, to personally oversee the leak investigation. Think about the resource allocation here. The strait is on fire. A sailor is dead, oil's breaking 80, and the head of the bureau is being told to prioritise finding out who told the Times about the president's plane. When the leak about the jet gets the FBI director, and the war gets a two-page letter to Congress, that ordering tells you exactly what's treated as the emergency. And on that letter, Trump did formally notify Congress the strikes resumed, which starts a 60-day war powers clock. So the constitutional fight over whether he can keep doing this is now ticking in the background, right behind the reporter's subpoenas.
The tale isn't any one act. It's the priority order. Watch what gets the top people. Two quieter stories that matter more than they'll trend. Stack, start in Tokyo.
Japan is doing something genuinely historic. Standing up its first centralised intelligence agency since the Second World War. For 80 years, allergic to anything resembling the wartime secret state, Japan deliberately scattered its intelligence functions. No longer. It's building a real service, with American, German, and Australian help on cyber, counter-espionage, and information sharing. Pointed squarely at China, Russia, and North Korea. When Japan decides it needs a proper spy agency, that is not a headline. That is a barometer. It tells you how the neighbourhood now reads the threat.
And bash, a debt finally being paid.
A small one, late. The Pentagon has paid out nearly $3 million to victims of Havana Syndrome, the first compensation of its kind. For years, American diplomats and intelligence officers reported crippling headaches, vertigo, cognitive damage after strange incidents abroad, and for years they were told, more or less, that it was in their heads. $3 million doesn't fix a brain injury, and the government still won't fully say what caused it. But writing the check is at least an admission that something happened to these people. After being gaslit for a decade, that's not nothing. It's just very, very overdue.
Two reminders that national security isn't only missiles, it's who watches and who gets believed. And finally, because the news gods have a sense of humour, the Pentagon has found a new adversary. Heap.
Windmills. I'm not kidding. The Department of Defence is actively blocking or objecting to more than 150 proposed wind energy projects across the country. On national security grounds. The argument, and it's not entirely crazy, the spinning blades create clutter that can blind military radar, and the tall towers could give cover to adversary surveillance drones. So across the Great Plains, the world's most powerful military is squaring off against turbines. 400 years ago, a Spanish novelist wrote about a deluded knight who charged windmills he mistook for giants. The Pentagon has read the book and decided, this time, the windmills really might be giants. I'll let you decide whether that's prudent radar policy or the most expensive game of Don Quixote ever played. But it's a real fight, on real maps, right now.
Prudence, or tilting at giants. Either way, keep an eye on it. That's your install for Tuesday, July 14th. Watch 4 o'clock, watch the barrel, and watch who Washington points its biggest people at. The analysis is Anna Dudley's. I just handed you the update. I'm Pip. Package install success. We'll see you on the next install.